FM.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves. What's up, Wisconsin? Happy Friday, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. We got a packed show, as always. Got a great guest coming on, a good lawyer friend of mine. If you're a small business owner wondering how to navigate the local licensing boards that you may have at your city, village, or town, you're not going to want to miss that. And in the second half of the show, I was promising Anya yesterday that I was bringing props and that we might have a little bit of fun. We might have a little flashback Friday kind of action going on. Yes, that is happening. I remembered my props today. Thank goodness. And, you know, mostly comedic to a comedic effect, but ultimately also a little weirdly, I don't know. Creepy, because these are old props, but they do relate to what's going on in the news today. And so that is indeed a little creepy. So not going to want to miss this part of the fun Friday. But let's get into it. Some things going on. I don't know if y'all out there heard in the last few hours, the Fani Willis disqualification motion was decided. So again, setting the stage here, and I don't want to bury the punchline, so because I want to hear from you, and what I want to hear from you is, do you think the judge fairly decided this? And here's what he decided: that either Fani Willis and her entire office has to step down from prosecuting Donald Trump and his 13 or 14 co-defendants in Georgia, or the special prosecutor that she had a relationship with has to step down from the case. Got to do one of the two. But the judge refused to remove her and her office entirely from the case, refused to conclude that there was an actual conflict of interest. So I want to know, do you think that's pretty much the right outcome? I'll tell you what I think, because all of this relates up to so much of what we were talking about this week, Anya, meaning all people that work in government, and certainly people at the high level of a district attorney or, you know, a county corporation council or other leaders in government, elected leaders, need to really be sure that your poo doesn't stink and that you act in all times, manners, places, truly in the best interests of the people that you swear an oath to serve, even if it comes at a personal cost, like, you know, not being in a relationship with somebody or not hiring your boyfriend. And I want to read a little bit from the decision because I think it's pretty extraordinary what this judge has said. I also think, and I'm going to tell you exactly what I think about the outcome here, but I think that there are a couple of places that gave me a little bit of the ick factor in the decision. And I want to share that very particularly with you. But again, to me, the big takeaway here, regardless of what this particular judge's decision was, and I've said this when I've talked about this particular issue, that is Fani Willis's alleged conflict of interest because she was in a personal relationship with the man whom she personally hired to join part of her team, and then who was paid. He wasn't a salaried prosecutor within the Fulton County District Attorney's Office. So, you know, this guy made a lot of money, and he made a lot of money because Fani Willis, a woman that he had a romantic relationship with, picked him to be part of the team. And they traveled a lot together. The defense claimed that she was benefiting financially because he would pay for these trips. They disputed that. There was like a 3-day long evidentiary hearing, which was a total sideshow. And let me be real clear here. As we talk about the standards to which all government officials should be held to account, we also need to recognize that whatever you may think about the district attorney's judgment or lack of judgment in engaging in this personal relationship, this romantic relationship, and or hiring the guy, and or if she wasn't in the relationship before she hired him, continuing to allow him to be part of her team once that relationship started. And there's different factual claims around that. Whatever you may think about that, at the end of the day, the factual predicate to the criminal charges was found by a grand jury in the state of Georgia to be sufficient to charge Donald Trump and his 13 defendants with serious crimes. Now, the judges dismissed six of those counts, but there's over 30 counts remaining, including the most serious counts, which involve basically racketeering, sort of conspiracy charges. So this has become a sideshow, and that's the problem. You know, we're trying to see if our legal system, if our quote-unquote justice system will function properly to bring to court, to trial, one of the most powerful men in our country, right? Like, if a former president can avoid trial and never, you know, have to face the evidence against him, stand before a jury of regular Americans, what does that say about our justice system? Again, quote unquote justice system. Regardless of whether or not you think he's guilty, there was sufficient facts found by grand juries to support these variety of charges, whether we're talking about the Manhattan District Attorney's case, now postponed for at least 30 days, maybe 90, probably won't. Maybe it doesn't even go to trial before the election. So the American public won't have the benefit of hearing the facts and evidence against Donald Trump in Manhattan. They may not hear it in Georgia now. They may not hear it in the Jack Smith case proceeding in federal court in Washington, D.C., because the Supreme Court has inserted itself and is dragging its feet. And we know for sure we're not going to hear the evidence against the president in a court of law, tested by having advocates argue with one another. We're definitely not going to hear that in the Florida case, because Eileen Cannon's a nitwit and basically is a lackey for Trump. So this is the problem. Fani Willis, by failing to understand the significant implications of this relationship and her hiring of this guy, has now delayed the prosecution. There is a patina of stink on the prosecution in Georgia because of this. Fundamentally, that's the problem. And this was, in my opinion, completely irrespective of whatever this particular judge decided about the defendant's motion to have her removed from the case. What do you think about this? Again, the judge decide. Do you think that there's an unscrubbable stink now on the Georgia prosecution? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. And, you know, you can't cleanse it. And that's the problem. That's what she should have known better than to do. And here's, so the judge decided, they basically said she has a conflict of interest. She's got a financial interest. And the judge said, no, there's no actual conflict of interest. And you haven't been able to prove with any evidence that she benefited financially. However, and here is the big however. However, there's an appearance of impropriety. And for that reason, either he has to go or she has to go. Meaning, the guy that was hired, private attorney, to become part of the prosecution team on an hourly rate basis, he either has to step down from the team, or the district attorney of Fulton County, Fani Willis, and her entire office has to remove itself from the case. What do you think? Was that the right outcome? Can the stink from all of this ever be scrubbed from the case? Because again, I want to be very clear here. None of this has anything to do with the facts that supported the 40-some-odd counts against Donald Trump now and his 13 co-defendants, again, six of which have now been tossed by the same judge. But the RICO counts still exist. Gene from Eau Claire, what do you think? Can the stink be removed, or are we going to have permanent stench over the Georgia prosecution? Oh, Gene's not quite there yet. Gene, is Gene there?
Fixed it. There you go.
Hi, Gene. What do you think? Is the stink removable on the Georgia prosecution?
Okay, I'm going to answer questions, but first I want to thank you for your great shows that you've been having. It was really great yesterday to hear all the things that went on, and I really appreciate whistleblowers. I really appreciate people who work for us when they stand up, truth to power. So anyway, with
thanks, Gene.
Frickin' Trump, the only stench on any of the justice system that I have observed over all these years that Trump's been in office is Trump and his associates and those who are coddling Trump or taking a knee to Trump, because this guy has never been held accountable for all the crimes he committed in his whole life. So he knows how to delay, delay, delay. He knows how to go after different people and try to soil them. And yeah, well, she may have made a mistake, but I watched the whole
the hearings
live,
yeah.
And it was like, you know, they kept trying and trying to beat at her. I loved her father, you know, with, hey, my family always used cash and never used checks. I mean, you know, it's so weird.
It was really weird. You're not going to want to leave the show today, Gene, because Donald Trump and his ability to escape accountability will come back to my props, the props that I brought in today. So it all comes around. And again, the props lend themselves to some eeriness given where our current moment is. Here's fundamentally the problem as I see it. And Jean's tipping her hat to it. When you are the corrupt, you will do anything, right? When there's no core, you'll do anything. There's no bottom. But when you go after the corrupt and the powerful and the elite, you cannot leave your flanks open even a little bit. You cannot make mistakes. This was a mistake. I'm going to tell you more about it. I'm going to read from this decision when we come back because some of the language is really interesting. Again, this is all about the standard that all government actors need to be held to, which is the highest that you can imagine. We need to demand more. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're going to talk more about the Fani Willis conflict of interest decision after these important messages here on The Maggie Dawn Show. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. Got a packed afternoon for everybody. A little bit of flashback Friday, a little bit of fun Friday coming up. But I've been talking about the Fani Willis conflict of interest decision that just dropped today. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. The judge basically said either she has to get off the case or her boyfriend or ex-boyfriend, depending on who you're talking to, has to get off the case. But he found no actual conflict of interest, found that there's no evidence that she received a financial benefit. But here's what he had to say. Quote, our highest courts consistently remind us that prosecutors are held to a unique and exacting professional standard in light of their public responsibility and their power. Does this sound familiar to anybody? Might have heard this a couple of times on my show. He went on. Most importantly, prosecutors are expected to assume a role beyond a mere advocate for one side and must make decisions in the public's interest, not their own personal or political interest. I almost jumped out of my seat. Like, how many times have I used almost that exact same phraseology to talk about this stuff? Not your personal interest, not your political interest. It's the public interest, damn it. And when those lines become blurred, I mean, essentially Trump's immunity argument is my personal interest, my political interest. If I'm in office, that defines the public interest. That's the problem. No. We don't have kings, right? We do not have kings in this country. It is not true that a president's personal and political interests are equivalent to the public interest. That's the standard that this judge was talking about as it applied to Ms. Fani Willis. My question to all of us, in addition, can we ever get the stink off this prosecution, is, gee whiz, does it sure seem to you like we do have two different legal systems? Because it does to me. It seems to me that Fani Willis is being held to a standard that has not been applied to the most powerful and the wealthiest people in this country. We can't even get Donald Trump into a court of law where the evidence will be presented and be tested. But she went through a three-day hearing. You know what I'm saying? Like, huh? So when I hear conservatives, oh, there's two systems of justice. Yes, for the rich and uber powerful, and then for all of the rest of us people. It's not for Democrats and conservatives. That isn't the difference in the court system. It's the extraordinarily rich and the extraordinarily powerful. There's one system, and then there's the rest of us folk. Dave from Madison, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
I think the most important issue with respect to the rich, wealthy people being treated differently is the fact there's no civil right to an attorney, but that's another issue. I think that this case is extremely meritorious, but
can we get rid of the stink, or has this tainted it?
Yeah, no, we can't get rid of the stink. This doesn't pass the smell test, and so hence we can't get rid of the stink. And the smell test kind of means, you know, if you just have a whiff of something, it's a problem. This is a real problem, because this doesn't have to do with the merits of the Trump case, which I just said are very meritorious. This has to do with prosecutorial discretion. And she definitely had a conflict of interest with respect to charging Trump, because her, you know, lover, she put on the payroll of the case. So their financial interest is tied to the money that they're receiving.
Yeah, that was the gravamen of the defendants and Trump's argument. The court decided there isn't evidence that she actually benefited financially. And because of that, there was no actual conflict of interest. They couldn't prove that her relationship with him predated his hiring. So you couldn't conclude that there's a conflict of interest. But I want to read for everybody the portion of the decision where the judge is like, okay, so there's no conflict of interest. And she didn't reap any financial benefits, but this, quote, this finding is by no means an indication that the court condones this tremendous lapse in judgment or, and pay attention to this part because I'm going to come back to it, or, so he calls this whole thing, this relationship, a tremendous lapse in judgment, or the court does not condone the unprofessional manner of the district attorney's testimony during the evidentiary hearing. So that's the thing that just happened a couple weeks ago. Rather, it is this judge's opinion that Georgia law does not permit the finding of an actual conflict for simply making bad choices, even repeatedly, and it is the trial court's duty to confine itself to the relevant issues and applicable law properly brought before it. Other forums or sources of authority, such as the General Assembly, the Georgia State Ethics Commission, the State Bar of Georgia, the Fulton County Board of Commissioners, or the voters of Fulton County may offer feedback on any unanswered questions that linger, but those are not issues determinative to the defendant's motions alleging an actual conflict. So he basically says, this is beyond my scope. She made bad decisions, but that'll be a matter for the State Bar. Here's the portion that I want to focus in on. And Jean, she watched the evidentiary hearing. It was like 3 days. The judge says the court does not condone the, quote, unprofessional manner of the district attorney during her testimony in that hearing. Now, that is some poo. I almost said the S word. Now, that is some poo, in my opinion, would not be said about an old, white, cantankerous guy on the stand. Her gender and her race played into that. He didn't need to make commentary about how she provided testimony. She was testy. She was ticked off. She was having her professional credibility impugned. And she, frankly, was a human being on the stand. He didn't need to comment on her conduct in the hearing. Could have just deleted that portion of that sentence, but he went ahead and hit her. And I got to tell you, that kind of criticism comes all the time to Black women, women of color, women in general, but especially to Black female lawyers. Right? Oh, we got to be a zealous advocate, but not too zealous. You got to defend yourself, but not too much. You got to be strong, but not too strong. You got to be strongly worded and spoken, but like, gosh, don't be angry or mean or, quote, unprofessional, that catch-all. So my opinion here is this, everybody. I think the judge largely got it right, but he screwed that up big time. Keep your opinions about how the district attorney chose to conduct herself in the hearing to yourself, judge. If you think it merits referral to the state bar's ethics arm, you go ahead and do that. But you don't, this, quote, unprofessionalism. If I have to hear that crap about Black female lawyers or Black lawyers in general anymore, I'm going to scream, which I guess I am doing on the damn radio. I've had it with that. Because what is unprofessional to one is damn right on point to another. I understood why that woman was mad, mad as hell. We come back, I'm going to be joined by a good friend of mine. We'll take some of these callers. We're going to ask Attorney Emile's opinion about the Fulton County decision. We're going to keep tearing it up, everybody. And if you're a small business owner, we're going to talk about how these licensing committees work in local government. My name is Maggie Dawn. We'll be back with more in a moment. Join the conversation. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842.
I don't think you listen. For me to come out, it must mean I'm a teacher. It must mean I'm not the same. It must mean I'm on your case. For me to come out, it means that I'm not
the Welcome back, Wisconsin. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join our conversation. We're talking about Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis's conflict of interest decision that dropped today. Some really interesting tidbits. I'm stoked to be joined by my good friend, Milwaukee-based attorney Emile Oviagele. Welcome, Attorney Emile.
Hey, Maggie. How's it going?
Pretty good. We're going to get right into it. What do you think of the decision in the Fulton County DA conflict case?
So, legally speaking, as Bill talked about, I think it's the right decision, right?
Right.
I think the judge made the right call under the circumstances, right? The key highlights being, no evidence of foul play, you
right?
Know, no conflicts of interest per se. However, I think the judge hit it right on the head. There is an appearance of impropriety, right? And I think this becomes even more important when you consider the person.
No kidding. You shoot at the king, don't miss, right?
Absolutely, right? And also to the job, right?
Yes.
I always tell people this. The most powerful person in America is a prosecutor.
Yes.
Because of prosecutorial discretion, which is ingrained in how our justice and judicial system works, which is only a DA or a district attorney or prosecutor gets to decide to bring certain cases, not even courts. I mean, by and large, are there nuanced exceptions?
Yeah, that's the prosecutorial discretion.
Absolutely.
How hard do you go after them? How many charges do you stack up?
Absolutely.
Just speaking about this, next Friday, I'm going to have a guest host. Her name is Elizabeth Miles. She's also an attorney.
Okay.
And she's going to talk about both the liberal and conservative case against plea bargaining.
Okay.
Because it has basically become pretty standard operating procedure for most prosecutors to effectively like overcharge in order to extract, some would argue extort, pleas especially from folk that don't have billions of dollars socked away to, you know, pay for lawyers until the cows come home. Do you mind if we take a couple of calls? I'm interested to hear what some of these folk have to say.
Absolutely.
We'll keep digging into this. Bob from Madison, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Say hello to Emil.
Yeah. The big thing, I think you hit it on the nail, is the rich and the powerful. And what is Donald Trump? Both.
Right.
He's both. The rich and the powerful skate free, and look at what he's doing. He's intimidating them. He's like a mafia-style boss, and he intimidates everybody around him and secures their loyalty. If we got rid of gerrymandering, he'd lose half his power in Congress. You know, the extremists are the winners.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Bob. I mean, the gerrymandering drives districts to become more and more red or extreme on both sides, but it's been mostly a problem for the MAGA party, right? And it's not even, I don't even know if I would consider Donald Trump, in, you know, like, oh, the richest and most powerful, and they have their own legal system. The legal system for Donald Trump is a legal system for just one person, because he is treated better and differently than any other criminal defendant, including prior politicians and mob bosses. That guy has gotten more breaks, more delays, more cracks at it, more due process than anybody else in the history of the U.S. judicial system. What do you think, Emil?
You know, I very valid points. And I hear this a lot. Americans, by and large, will agree that there are two different standards, right?
Mm-hmm.
The rich, the wealthy, the whiter you are, the better it is, right? Now, that's the easy question, and that's a very easy realization. However, most Americans feed back into that system
yep.
of contempt, that system that they realize
ain't
is,
working
just,
for
is
them.
Duplicitous, right?
Yep.
You know, I'll give you an example, right? I guarantee you that if you pull every older person in the city of Milwaukee, and they'll tell you that, hey, you know, there are two systems for justice, right?
Yep.
One for the rich, one for the wealthy, one for the whiter folks, and the other's for the poor, right?
Yep.
But what they don't realize is, in the same breath, as evidenced last week, I had a client whose license, his tattooing license, was yanked or recommended for revocation solely because of a pending charge for a minor case. Right. And I said, what's ironic about this is we have a guy who is running for the most powerful office in the land, probably in the world.
Right.
Facing 91 charges, including charges related to overthrowing the government. And so you don't even see how at a micro level you reaffirm the very thing that you hate. But you got this little guy here, right?
Yeah, the tattoo parlor guy.
Absolutely, right?
You're squeezing him.
You're going to disregard his constitutional rights, his presumption of innocence. It gets even better, because I noted this in a letter I sent to the city. I said, I also know that whenever there is a Milwaukee Alder person who's been charged with a crime, right?
Yeah.
Built every the mayor, the common council
due
president,
process.
They'll tell you, hey, you know, this is concerning. But remember the presumption of innocence. Again, what's the difference between a politician charged, even at the local level, and a tattoo artist, right?
Access and power.
It's their folks. It's their friends, right?
Yep.
So they reaffirm. So at an abstract level, people will agree to these things. And at a micro level, do the exact opposite
of what
and reaffirm.
Saying. Yeah, the
what
dual
they say.
System.
It's crazy. And someone who grew up in Nigeria, you know, I grew up in Nigeria. I moved to the United States when I was 16. Watching this play out, it has been so fascinating to me.
And it's infuriating. I mean, that's one of the things, as a public servant, nearly 15 years, and as a lawyer, and you've known me for a while, what you see is what you get all the damn time with me. In
yep.
other words, this fundamental internal consistency.
Mm-hmm.
I don't treat anybody differently. Everybody gets the same Maggie. And I approached my job as a lawyer within government mm-hmm. that way. My job in government wasn't to have a political opinion, but it was to help the politicians mm-hmm. get it right and to be fearless in telling them what they needed to know. I would like to think that I'm like that all the time, no matter what place I'm in. And that's what I think, you know, it's easy to speak of platitudes.
Mm-hmm.
it's very hard to live the values mm-hmm. when somebody is pressuring you to do the other thing, right? Mm-hmm. When it's like, oh, well, I've got constituents complaining about the license for this, blah, blah, blah. Well, the guy hasn't been convicted yet. What are we even talking about? I'll see you next year after your case is done with, right? Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing, again, being able to have a spine and live the values that you talk about when you are under incredible personal or political strain, when it may cost you personally or politically, that's honor. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of hot air.
And politicians and even lay people fail that test all the time because we know that the Donald Trump era started with a lot of very good Republicans who, for political convenience, have sort of faded away, some even at the extent of seeming quite ridiculous. My favorite one is Ted Cruz, right? I mean, I remember...
Who condemned him roundly. Lindsey Graham, same thing. This guy's a xenophobic racist, blah, blah, blah. Now he's like, oh, Donald Trump's great.
And I'm just like, oh, my God. And I remember that period when Donald Trump had this whole set for Ted Cruz's wife. Or had the thing. And I'm like, come on, dude. Like, you know, that as a man, like, you know, what are you talking about? Went after his father.
Went after your wife and your dad. And you're now licking his boots.
And he came back and he kissed the ring.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, regardless of, you know, I think of the John McCain's of the world and some Republicans that have stood steadfast. Right. And paid the price. Because what's different with Donald Trump, and I tell people this, and I consider myself to be an independent, it's not a Republican-Democratic thing. It's a basic level of decency and competence, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And as a true patriot, no one person can be bigger than the United States of America. And I see my friends on the Trump wagon. And I'm like, you call yourself a patriot, and maybe you don't know what you're playing with. Because as someone who grew up in a country where there wasn't always democracy, and even when we have democracy, it's cronyism. I know Donald Trump.
He's so familiar. You know the caricature.
I see him. It's almost endearing in a very weird way. Because the familiarity is like, oh.
I know you, brother.
And a part of me is like, oh, my God, I guess America isn't as perfect. The rest of the world's like, oh, my God. I thought they had it all figured out.
Yeah. But that's, you know, some of the most insightful, honest, and to the point observations about our current state I've heard from people who have immigrated here and immigrated to here from places like your homeland, Nigeria, that can see it because they have experienced differently dysfunctional or sometimes similarly dysfunctional quote-unquote democracies, you can diagnose it because you've seen the symptoms.
Absolutely, because we see America and we've always viewed America, and I still view America as a city on the hill, right? Whether or not we live up to that promise can be debatable. And to see someone, you know, and I just come in and destabilize that reality, almost turning it into some sort of fiction, and seeing Americans not understand what's going on, it's quite fascinating. And I would challenge every American out there, you know, go out there, travel the world, go to Europe, go to other parts of the world. It's hilarious. I was just in Portugal and I was just in England, and I got to have conversations with people about our political system, because the rest of the world's very, very educated about what's going on in America.
Oh, yeah.
And they think it's hilarious. This is happening. I'm not saying they're perfect over there, but there is because we're not having policy debates.
No,
we stopped having those. Remember when Obamacare was the thing, and when we would have conversations about the debt ceiling, and we would talk about approaches and universal health care. Now sometimes we're talking about you know people's, the sizes of people's hands and ridiculous things.
Well, even when it approaches policy, one of the things that I've been pointing out repeatedly is that those discussions have now themselves been debased. So even when we get close to a policy debate, it's infused with evil versus good and lies and just a bunch of distractionary garbage that, as I say, the simple problems have been solved. All that's left is the tough stuff. And if somebody tells you that they got a simple answer to the tough stuff, they're either lying or a fool or both. And so stop listening to people who tell you that they've got the panacea, the magic bullet for all this kind of jazz. Dave from Madison, what's up? You're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I didn't think you'd let me continue. Thank you very much. Yeah, I was talking about prosecutorial discretion. Yeah, I think that's a really... Am I still on?
Yep, you're here. Go ahead, Dave. Wanted to let you finish.
Thank you, Maggie. Thank you. Yeah, I was talking about prosecutorial discretion and how it's this prosecution isn't in the public interest. We're talking about conflicts of interest, too. But, yeah, I think that a lot of three of these cases are very more meritorious. But I really don't think it's in the public interest to bring these cases for a lot of reasons. The first is they have given Donald Trump the nomination. And it may have.
So do you think Donald Trump becomes the Republican nominee if he was never charged with any of these crimes?
If he was not. Oh, I have no. Hello. No, yep. I don't necessarily. I think the primaries would be infinitely more competitive. You got to remember, for example, Bill Clinton, at the height of his popularity, was the day he was impeached.
Right. And I got to cut you off, Dave. I'm sorry. We got to take a couple of important messages. You're going to come back with Emil Ovigale.
Get it right, Maggie.
Woo! No
kidding.
Ovigale. I'm going to get there, y'all. Attorney out of Milwaukee, friend of mine, friend of the show, friend of the entire Civic Media Network. If you're on the line, stay there. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-75-CIVIC. I'm going to give Amy from Madison the last word on the text line. The stink of privileged white guys digging into a black woman's private life will remain. I think a jury will be able to view the facts of the case without being prejudiced by this. Thanks, Amy. Keep it locked. Keep texting and calling. 855-75-CIVIC. Here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Back with more in a moment. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. This hour, joined by my friend and attorney, Emil Ovigale. Great to have you, Emil. So excited to have this chit-chat like live on the radio because we chop it up when we're hanging out at Casablanca on Brady Street. Now we just get to chop it up on the air.
I know, right? This is so much fun. I'm so happy. I mean, this is really great. As a political junkie myself, you got to do this for a living.
That's what I think too. I pinch myself.
You know,
this is my job.
The law practice is ghetto. It's a very ghetto profession for anyone who doesn't know.
You heard it here from Emil. You're hustling when you're lawyering. That's all I gotta say. Hustling. Here's what the next most interesting portion of the decision is. So he goes on to analyze the appearance of impropriety, right? Mm-hmm. To come to this, District Attorney Willis, either you got to leave the case, and not just her whole office, mm-hmm. or Attorney Wade has to quit the engagement. And he gets there by going through the precedent about the appearance of impropriety. Here's what he has to say. It's pretty interesting. Because it immediately raised a couple of other questions in my mind.
Okay.
Quote, the appearance standard recognizes that even when no actual conflict exists, a perceived conflict in the reasonable eyes of the public threatens confidence in the legal system itself. When this danger goes uncorrected, it undermines the legitimacy and moral force of our already weakest branch of government. And he quotes from a Georgia case from 2023. And in that citation, he quotes this part of this 2023 case that says this, quote, the judiciary's judgment will be obeyed only so long as the public respects it, end quote, which is a quotation from the Federalist 78 by Alexander Hamilton. So I want to emphasize that the judiciary's judgment will be obeyed only so long as the public respects it. So there's a whole bunch of really important concepts there. Like, one, that the appearance of impropriety is judged in the reasonable eyes of the public. And it's important, and we have to be concerned about impropriety even when there's no actual conflict, because it threatens the confidence in the legal system. And he ties that, the moral force of our already weakest branch of government. So in other words, he's saying we have to have confidence in the legal system. We need legitimacy in the legal system. It's the weakest branch of government. And so unless the judiciary is respected by the public, it has lost its purpose, is effectively what he's saying. And so he goes on to say this relationship undermined and certainly by any reasonable measure has the appearance of impropriety, and then he reaches the conclusion. But here's what immediately popped to my mind, which was, no kidding. And by the way, have you checked out that court in D.C. that's been power sucking like a Hoover vacuum for the last 25 years? And this guy named Clarence Thomas, whose wife was texting the now criminally indicted insurrectionist MAGA president while the insurrection was going on, texting his chief of staff, and this guy's not recusing himself? So to this judge, I say, where does Clarence Thomas's failure to recuse fall within the public respect, legitimacy, moral force, reasonable eyes of the public standard he just applied to the district attorney?
Right in that gap where the rules don't apply to us.
Yeah. Oh, is that it? I mean, for real.
I mean, you think about this, right? If you look at the American society, if you ask each one of the Supreme Court justices, including Mr. Thomas himself, he'll tell you that that's accurate. That
yes.
Absolutely.
And they'll mean it when they say it, right? Straight-faced.
And when it comes to them, they have to apply it. They forget the rules. But here's the thing. When they forget the rules, because he is part of the rich and powerful, there are no consequences. That's the difference. That's a difference when the rich and powerful in a political class, you know, get to forget or not apply the rules, right? Yep. Now, could you imagine?
I want to be sure that people understand what you just said. That the difference, you know, if you're part of the 1%, if you screw up, you make a big old fatty mistake, and it's like, oh, swell, I'm getting away with that. The rules don't apply to me. Or you find your way to logic, explain away your accountability. That's when you know you're just one of the regular folks.
Absolutely.
When you are accountable, right? When that hurts your paycheck, hurts you, you're looking down the long arm of the law, you're just one of the regular people. You're not the 1%, right?
Exactly. And again, these people in abstract will agree, the Supreme Court would agree that it is wrong to do anything that impugns on the integrity of the court, like receiving gifts from mega donors whose cases you would end up hearing and deciding on. And obviously, and if you look at the trajectory of the appeals and the decisions, right, like that's wrong. That absolutely weakens the judicial system, because you are right about something, right? Our judicial system is unique in a sense that courts don't have a force. They don't have the police to enforce their things.
They have no standing army.
They rely on the executive branch at most, and also they rely on the trust of the people. People saying and people thinking, hey, a judge said I should do that. It's really important. I should probably do that. Right. Think about it in a civil context. You said, okay, criminally, right, the executive branch comes into play in terms of enforcing, you know, sentences and all that stuff.
Well, the historical example that may pop to most easily to mind was that the president had to order the National Guard to integrate schools post Brown v. Board, right? Like, but the court itself does not command military or police force to execute its will. It relies on the other branches of the government, which gets us back to this point about impropriety and the fact that, frankly, Clarence Thomas won't abide the own rules that he will, in another context, extol as what makes the judiciary great. We got to go to the top of the hour break in just a couple of moments. I wanted to read this last part. We're going to come back after news, weather, and sports with attorney Emil Ovia-Gele. If you are a small business owner, you are not going to want to miss this, because we're going to talk about the local licensing committees, what those processes and procedures look like. If you got questions for attorney Emil, give us a text or a call, 855-75-CIVIC. But here's what the court had to say towards the end of the Fani Willis removal decision. An odor of mendacity remains.
Poetic.
Poetic. And totally hypocritical when it comes to Clarence Thomas, because an odor of mendacity? I'll just call it stank. Clarence, you stank. I'm Maggie Dog. Keep it locked. News, weather, and sports up next for you here on the Civic Media Network. We'll be back talking local licensing committees with attorney Emil Ovia-Gele after these important messages. I tried to get by, but I'm burning. I'm behind. My mind, it runs. All these thoughts I'm troubling.